University, the voice of Reichman University.
De-influenced. It's time to set the record straight with Jana Hoffman and Amanda Jakubowicz.
Welcome to De-Influence, a show that explores the world behind the camera, the influencers who can affect our lives and the world in which they live. My name is Jonah Hoffman, and with me, as always, is Amanda Jakubowicz, and today we are joined by a very special guest. She's a Jewish influencer, model, and artist, Danielle Jablonka. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for being here.
We're so happy to have you here. Big fans of your content. It's great stuff, gotta say.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
With that said,
this is also our first Zoom interview, so we will be interrupting each other.
So probably. We're working on it.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's
a learning curve. I'm back in Canada. I got back 2 weeks ago, and I'm really sad about it.
Mm-hmm. Israel misses you.
Mm-hmm. I know.
We're considering Google meetings at a certain point, also to see if those work better. But we'll figure it out as we go along. With that said,
that's like doing Bing instead of Google. We're just like,
I use Bing. Let's not diss on Bing.
So that's a sign of something. No, just kidding.
Just to hop right into it here. How did you get into this world? Obviously before October 7th and after October 7th, your content was kind of two different things. How did you really enter this world of content creation, especially among the Jewish and Israel influencer community?
Yeah, so specifically advocacy, I built my platform as a fashion model. So I had a platform sort of built in that arena of fashion, blogging or modeling, whatever. And in high school, I was getting really involved in like Jewish youth group and Jewish inner work. So I kind of, my world kind of collided in high school. I was studying fine art and fashion design, and at the same time I was doing my youth groups, and it started to sort of merge, and I wanted to take all of that Jewish pride that I had from youth group, whether that be like BBYO summer programs, and put it into my art, where I received a lot of pushback from others, just saying like, we get it, you're Jewish, move on, we get it, blah, blah, blah. So it really even pushed me further to be even more Jewish, because if it bothered people so much, let me do it even more. And I decided to focus most of my art on activism and being proud Jewish, my identity, my grandparents being Holocaust survivors. And then as social media kind of grew with reels and posting videos on Instagram, I started to kind of, like when Kanye started with his anti-Semitism, and it started showing up for me more and more in my model-y atmosphere, I feel like, or just publicity-wise, I decided to go on social media and talk about it and encourage others to wear their Judaism proudly. So that's how I began my advocacy journey. I think back in like 2018, 2019, I was always posting that I'm Jewish. Here I am. I'm Jewish. My grandparents were Holocaust survivors. Know what this is. Educate yourself. And slowly, it's just really... Not slowly, fast. It's become very centered around my Zionism and my identity.
Nice.
I love how your advocacy is like literally just existence. Like your message to the world is like, we exist.
Yeah.
I'm proud I exist. I love my background.
100%. I always said, even since I was very little, like when I was prepping for my bat mitzvah, I always said, I don't know who I'd be if I weren't a Jew. And that still rings very true today. It's just a part of who I am and where I come from.
Right. I literally say that all the time. Like every time I apply to like Hillel or like whatever, like if I'm applying to some Jewish thing, the first sentence I write in every application is, I don't know what my personality would be if I wasn't Jewish, if I didn't have Israel. Like,
yeah, Zionism is my personality.
Exactly. So, like, you feel super connected to Israel. Now you're in the process of moving there. Well, you moved there in the process of Aliyah. Why do you think you're so connected to Israel if you're not Israeli? Like,
you grew up Jewish,
but what is the thing that's, like, Israel, Zionism, like that? What do you think that connection is?
So I respect those who are, like, every Jew is Judean and like blah, blah, blah. Like, I do believe that all Jews are from Judea and that's where Judaism stems from. I don't believe that every Jew needs to say I'm from Judea. Or, you know, there's that type of Zionism, which is totally respectable. And I do think I'm on the cusp of it now. But for me, my passion, my dad is Israeli, and that would technically make me Israeli, but not in a passport form. When I was growing up, and this is actually also a recent observation while living here, is that I always felt like I outwardly had to be so extra Jewish in order to be anywhere. Like, people just always assume I'm Latin or Spanish, and I would get so upset, like, no, I'm Jewish, and it speaks Spanish to me, and, you know, especially in Miami, and there aren't so many Jews, so I'd always so extra Jewish, wearing a big star all the time, people just correcting them, blah, 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 and I think that for me, growing up, I was always, like, I'm Israeli, like, my dad's from Israel, I'm Israeli, like, I felt more connected to Israel than I did America, because that's where the Jewish people are, and now living here, I can absolutely say that it was the first year for me during Christmas that I actually enjoyed Christmas and could look at the lights and not feel a need to be like, oh, they're pretty, but like, I like Hanukkah, you know? I didn't have to extra overcoat my Judaism because everyone around me is Jewish. And I think that's something I really yearned for growing up, is just not having to explain myself all the time, not having to worry or at camp taking my star off when we go on field trips. Like, I want to just be and not have to worry about my Judaism. I'm Israeli.
Yeah. Well, okay. You are Israeli. I didn't realize that your dad was Israeli. So, I mean, that's the answer, but that's no, okay. I totally agree. And like, you know, I say this too, because I'm very much like in the process right now, like I'm about to finish university and I'm in the process of deciding like, okay, well, where do I want to live now after university? And, you know, like, I really feel what you're saying with like, is our life just going to be, oh, we're like living inside this Jewish bubble in Canada, in Miami, whatever. And as soon as you go out of that, you just don't feel like yourself and you don't feel accepted and welcomed. And you don't feel like you can really be proud of your identity. Like, is that life?
I think that's a huge part of why people feel so much of a belonging when they come here, and so much of a just acceptance. I, for instance, when I knew before October, like when I decided, like, I'm going to live here, I said to myself, like, I feel the most me when I'm here. I feel like the best version of myself, because I feel like I'm not having to prove myself to everyone all the time. And that's a huge, huge thing. Whether I'm Israeli or not, it's just I think it's a universal Jewish feeling that you always have to be the spokesperson for the Jewish people. You always have to speak on it. And I do think it's our responsibility outside in the diaspora to be a spokesperson, because where else are other people going to get their information from? You know, it's our responsibility. It's our duty. And that being said, when you come here, it's this burden that's lifted. Like, the kids in school that I teach, I'm an English teacher here in Israel, they literally don't understand that there's Jews outside of Israel. They're like, you're Jewish and you speak English? Like, it's a total flip. It's crazy. So, yeah, I think it's a huge part of our diaspora experience as well.
So was Aliyah...
I feel like you took my journal and, like, read, like, the stuff that I write about Israel and how much I care about Israel and stuff, and then, like, said it. Like, you were literally taking the words out of my mouth.
Happy to do so.
was Aliyah something that was always in the picture for you then, or was it more like you might have spent a few years here, gone back and done like back and forth or something like
that?
No.
So it's like, just to note also, I'm 24. I graduated from college 2 years ago. And I, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you asked me if I would ever move to Israel. My whole life, I'd always say, hell no. I was always like, it's too small. There's nothing for me to do there. My work is here in America. Like, my advocacy is here in the US. There's nothing for me there. It's too small. So the answer is no. I didn't ever see myself living here. And I came here in the summer of 2023, right? June of 2023. I came with a suitcase packed for 1 week, and I pack a lot of stuff. But I ended up extending my trip about 5 times while being here, and I stayed for a month and a half. And I just had, and I was on my own for once. I wasn't on a trip with a coordinator or whatever. I wasn't on a program. I wasn't with my family. It was just me staying at my uncle's cool apartment in Tel Aviv and just living my life out of the same outfits that were meant for 10 days and wearing them again and again for like a month and a half. And nobody cared. Nobody cared what I looked like. No one cared what I was wearing. And everything just felt really good. And I knew in my mind this, and that's where the whole thing we just spoke about came to fruition. I was just like, this is where I'm the best version of myself. This is where I want to be. I feel this weight lifted off of me that I feel understood. And Israelis will never understand that. Israelis still can't wrap their head around me being an American Jew wanting to live in Israel and having this overwhelming sense of Jewish pride and identity, because they don't experience that need to be so outwardly Jewish all the time and prove themselves. You can just be here.
Yeah, I was talking with this Israeli guy literally about this topic, because he's like, oh, like, I don't even care about the actual religion, like tradition is what's important to me, and sitting with my family and you know, the actual laws of the religion don't as much affect me personally. That was kind of his stance. He grew up in Tel Aviv, you know, and, you know, growing up in outside of Israel, that connection that we have is like that Jewish pride and that tradition as well, but in a way of coming together because we're Jews and because we have shared ethnicity, but also shared religion, and just that different type of mindset going in. And then you come to Tel Aviv or just anywhere in Israel and you have that like Zionist flame inside you. And then the Israelis are like, why do you like this place so much? Like, I want to leave.
Absolutely.
And they just don't get that, like that passion. Yeah. Sometimes some do, some don't.
And that's why I'm grateful, honestly, that I wasn't born here, because I have that sense of pride. I got it's almost like a Jew in private school, a Jewish diaspora kid and private school. Like, you're just Jewish, and everyone knows you're Jewish, and you're in your bubble. But for me, I was always in public school, and I was exposed to anti-Semitism, and I was exposed to other religions and other people and other thoughts. And I'm grateful for that. As much as I wished that I knew how to read Hebrew and pray and had a better Jewish community where I grew up, I'm more grateful that I didn't, because now I have more gratitude for what I have now. When you have everything, you don't know what you're missing.
And your Jewish school teachers and your youth group leaders and stuff did a really good job. Like, this, like, Zionistness.
I agree.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned here that, you know, you came to Israel kind of beforehand. And Amanda mentioned beforehand when we were prepping for an interview that you chose Masa
for your
Israel stuff. Do you want to talk about that a little bit if you're...
So I think Masa and all of the programs are like Masa, such as like Onward, Birthright, all of those, they all fall under the same umbrella, nonprofit, come to Israel experience. It's an Israel experience. I recommend it. You have to take an opportunity. I personally am struggling just because I have a lot of things going on. I probably should have skipped the program part and made my Aliyah. But that's me, and that's my message to everyone, just make Aliyah. But I think my main message, it's not just focused on Masa. Know that you have options such as Masa or Onward or all of these different internships to get here, but make Aliyah. as a student, as a young Jew, or not as a young Zionist, take advantage of every opportunity there is, especially as a non-Israeli citizen. There are so many programs and internships and opportunities. And my advice to anyone who's thinking about coming to Israel is just to take advantage of all those opportunities. And when you have that time in your life, for me, I just graduated 2 years ago. I had a year of working, and now I'm like, this is my second year, and I'm here. I prepared myself mentally for a year. I told people I'm not going to be here next year. I'm going to go to Israel. And here I am in Israel. It's just, you're never going to have another time in your life. If you're in between something, just do it. Get to know yourself. Take advantage of all the opportunities that are there, whether it be Masa, whether it be an internship in Tel Aviv or something in Jerusalem or whatever it is. Just come to Israel, discover yourself, and get to know your identity on a deeper level.
So as someone literally going through this exact dilemma as we speak, where did you get that confidence to say, like, you know what, just get up and do it? Like, where... Did it kind of take you a while in a process back in America? Like, were people telling you, oh, but Israel's so much harder to live and it's so much more expensive and it's this and it's that and you have a job in America and why would you do this?
Of course.
Like, how did you not listen to that advice?
I knew in my heart, I don't know how, because I'm usually the most like chop person, and I was at the tip of my career, honestly, when I made this decision. But when October 7th happened, it almost reaffirmed it. Like, at first I was like, am I sure about this? Blah, blah, blah. But when October 7th happened, I said, like, I need to be there. I want to be there. I don't want to be far away. I know that anti-Semitism is only going to get worse, and I want to be there. And it doesn't have to be forever. I know plenty of people who come here and then decide it's not for them. You go back. And this happened to me, honestly. I think what made my decision easier was that I had this exact experience when I went to college for the first time. I got a full ride, this amazing, cool experience to go studying California at a fine arts university on a full ride for a year, for my whole year. After my first year, excuse me, I was just having a miserable time. I felt like such a loser. I was like, everyone else is at their state schools. Everyone's having the best year of their lives. Everyone is growing and they left home. And I hate this. I'm so unhappy. And eventually I made the hardest decision of my entire life. And I said, you know what? I can't be miserable every day. I need to go home. I need to reset. And I felt like a loser. I felt like I'm going back to my hometown. I'm going to a state school. I'm giving up a full scholarship. But it was the best thing I ever did, because COVID hit. I said bye. I went back to Florida, and I was embraced by my Jewish community. I went to school far enough that I wasn't so close to home. And I just got so involved in everything I'd missed so much that year. So when it came to the decision of, am I going to move to Israel? Why not? Like, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is I struggle, I do. But I'm still happy to be here, and I'm still happy in general. So I don't see myself going back anytime soon. And it builds my character. Do I regret ever going to San Francisco? Absolutely not. I learned a lot. I learned what pronouns were. Didn't know that coming from Florida. So I just, you know, I learned a lot, and I don't regret the experience. And for me, that's the same here. I'm happy to be here. And if, God forbid, anything goes wrong, if anything happens, like, you can always go back. But wouldn't you rather say I tried it and I did it than not do it at all and just always wonder for the rest of your life, what if I'd moved to Israel?
Mm-hmm. This is so inspiring. Like, my mom said the same thing to me yesterday. And I was like, no, I don't know. Like, you're being so logical. Like, I don't know. And you're saying it. And I'm like, wow.
I do this all the time. My therapist gives me some like incredible advice, and I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then someone else says the exact same thing in a few other words, and she's like, Danielle, I literally said this to you. But as long as it's getting through, that's what matters.
It's like you need to like hear it over and over, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh.
So
and then
it.
You need Danielle
so
LeBlanc to say it.
Repetition, yes. Repetition, repetition.
If you take the risk, seriously, like, you always have to, like, what's the worst? Like, the worst is you come and it sucks. And you're like, oh my God, I hate this. I'm going home. Period. You could say, I tried it, wasn't for me, but go for it.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I love it. Okay, so last thing about your, like, Aliyah process right now and Masa. Sure. So for me, like, so I was a Birthright staffer in the summer, and then we met on the Hasbara trip a couple weeks ago, and yeah. I went back from like being the staffer to and like having participants and stuff to being the participant. And it wasn't as bad as I thought, but sometimes you feel like, oh, like, I already graduated, I'm at a higher level, and then to kind of go back down, like, do you feel that way in being a participant in Masa?
No, yes and no. No, it's funny though, because there are people in my program who are in their 30s, like mid-30s, who have been married before and now are just like here in Israel and being a teaching assistant like me. I think everyone's just like at different points in their life and discovering themselves. At the end of the day, I'm still an adult and I make all my own decisions. This program just gives me like a job. And I do said job. Do I like it? No. But, like, whatever, I'll stick it out for 5 more months. It's not unbearable. And I committed. I made a commitment knowing what I was getting into. You still have free time. I still can go where I want. I got lucky. I have amazing roommates. I've made amazing friends. If anything, for me as a graduate who came on a program, to Israel, I keep calling it my soft aliyah because it was a soft landing. You know, you think you'll move here and like all the friends that you hang out with in the summer are going to have all this time for you and you're going to do all the things that you had fun doing in the summer. Absolutely not. Like people have jobs, people have family, people have things going on, and you don't just like move to Israel and everyone stops everything for you. Now that I came here on a program, I have roommates and I have new friends from all over going through the same thing that I'm going through, and we do that together. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm the first one to tell you I hate going from leader to participant, but it doesn't feel so much like a participant because I'm going through it with 50 other people my age and older. So,
right.
If anything, I'm happy that I'm doing it younger because I feel it's okay for someone to be like, hey, you're going to go to the Negev this weekend on a field trip. Do I like camping? Absolutely not. But whatever, I like the people I'm around.
Okay, build your Israeli character with like the coffee and the desert and all that.
I 100% understand that, having done two summer programs myself before I came to Israel and then spent 3 years here and then made Aliyah. So it was very much a slow landing all the way in.
It's a soft landing. It's a soft Aliyah, like a soft launch in a relationship. It's a soft Aliyah.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of relationship, wait, we have more questions and then we'll get to relationship.
Just to switch gears for a quick second here, you know, you're Jewish and you have the platform that you have, and you know, you want to go beyond just having like the nice little pictures on Instagram and everything. I think this was true for a lot of people after October 7th happened. How would you compare your content pre-October 7th to post-October 7th?
Funny you asked that now, because earlier I was looking for an old post and I was scrolling and I was like, my feed used to look so pretty. And right now, just specifically pre-October 7th, it was definitely more of a mix of just modeling content and then throwing in some Zionism and throwing in some, this is the latest in Israel and here's a post about being Jewish and proud. So it's definitely a way more balanced mix of content. Now I just feel like I know for a fact that my entire feed's been pretty much taken over by my activism and about Israel. It's just, I don't feel, it's almost, doesn't feel appropriate to talk about things other than like the dire importance of our hostages and what's going on here. I feel like with a following comes a responsibility. So that's me personally. I have been told, and I know for a fact, that I would probably succeed more if I were to bring my feed back to that balance. For me, I will and I can. But right now I like where I'm at. But for others, it's so important to find that balance of activism and a niche, because there's so many people who can make infographics and talk about Israel. At the end of the day, people follow you for you, and I recognize that in my own content and know that I need to shift back into a balance. But as of right now, I'm very comfortable in the content I post and keeping it very Jewish, Israel centered.
Right. I 100% understand that, having done regular content before October 7th, where it was like this nice balance and whatever, and now it's just full blown off the board activism and everything. And I saw your interview that you did on, I don't remember which channel, but you mentioned, and you also said in a post, when did it become okay to be an awful person, especially on social media? With, you know, people in comment sections just saying abhorrent, awful things. Like, can you elaborate on that, like, thought and that point a little? Because I think it's just so, just a, such a fascinating point to make, especially nowadays with the age of social media that we live in.
Honestly, I'm so grateful that you, like, took the time or, like, remembered something that I said. It makes it feel a lot more, I feel recognized and seen, because sometimes you post so much and you don't even remember your own words. So it's really, I appreciate that you remember that I said that, and I still don't understand. I don't understand how people can just be so horrible. The more I open social media, the darker it gets, and I don't see a limit. I'm not, all I can tell you, all that I take away from it is to be the light, and it's so cliche and it sounds like BS, but at the end of the day, I gain nothing from stooping to their level. Like, my mom sits on Facebook all day and God only knows what arguments she's having in the comment sections. But, like, you know, do you, if that's you, sure. But at the end of the day, my whole life, I've always worried a lot what other people think. And most people tell you it's not. That's like, don't worry about what other people think. Don't care. But I grew up in the age where media was emerging, and like they're always telling you whatever you put on the internet, it's there forever. And I feel like they don't emphasize that enough nowadays for young folk. So I always grew up with the mentality, whatever I put on the internet is going to be there forever. So I genuinely, you catch more, what is it? You catch more flies with honey. You gotta be, kill them with kindness always. It sounds so much easier said than done. It sounds cliche. It just sounds like BS. Like, yes, be nice all the time. Like, I get angry, trust me. And it's taken me a long time to work on it. But I always thought to myself that my name is my brand. You know, since I was in high school, I always thought like Danielle Blanca is my brand. Like, my name, my identity, my life is my brand. And I think everyone should think that way. That your name is your brand. No one else has your name. No one else can tell your story better than you. When you're telling your story and when you're going on the media, you remember that I think of everything I put on the internet that someone's gonna screenshot it and gonna like blow it up into a news article. Whether I have 500 followers or like the 30,000 followers, I think to myself, no matter what I put out there, someone's gonna see it and it's going to bite me in the tushy one day. So always be thoughtful and keep records. Keep records of all those ugly, nasty comments. And remember that any dark and awful comments are just a reflection of other people, and that it's only boosting your algorithm when you get ugly comments because it's still engagement.
100%. I can really tell. You gotta keep
Sorry, that
receipts.
was like a long response, but
It's 100% relatable. You gotta keep receipts of all the things that they're saying in the comment section. I have a whole folder on my phone at this point of just like,
as you should.
that's creative. No, that one's okay. Some
That
of
will
them
make a
are,
great video one day.
yeah, some of them are funnier than others. Like, I hate to say it, but like some of them are like genuinely like, how did you think of this one?
Yeah, or just like keep
I
having a
credit where credit's
conversation with
due.
yourself in my DMs. Like, it's, I'm not losing any time.
And so I want to just go back to one thing that you just said. You said, oh, my mom's on Facebook and God knows what type of arguments she's getting into. So to go back to the little thesis of our podcast, which is introspection on our side, on the pro-Israel community, what do we do that we maybe don't want to be doing? So are there any points where we're being awful people on social media and we're not realizing it, or we're realizing it, which might
100%.
be even worse? But, you know, how do we actually be better at advocating on social media and not doing the things that we're blaming the other side for?
Oh my God, that's a fantastic question. I think number one for me as an influencer is just competition within the are my own Jewish community and just judgment between other creators within this activism space. Everyone advocates in their own way, and there's no point in like trying to suppress someone else or trying to be the first one to say something. At the end of the day, there's a little bit to it, right? There's always you want to be the first account to report on this, and you want to be the first one to say this, and you want to have the spiciest post or whatever, the most divisive statement. But at the end of the day, I think it's just the most important that we support one another and try to uplift. And if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all. And it goes right back to reputation. The way you present yourself is everything. I know we're in an age of like free the nipple, I don't know, and like be free and positive and like be whoever you want to be on the internet. But again, it's gonna follow you forever. And I think class is timeless, and you can like be classy and be smart and pretty, like all of these things. You don't have to be overly exposed on the internet. You don't have to be saying these awful things to make your point. The only person you can control is yourself. So I don't know if that answers your question exactly, but it all goes back to reputation and brand. And as a Jewish person, you are a representation of all Jewish people. And so if someone's talking badly, like it's a representation of me. If someone's making Jew jokes, just because they're like, it's okay, I'm Jewish. I don't think it's okay that you're Jewish and you're making Holocaust jokes, because you're giving anyone around you permission to do so. So it just, you have to hold yourself to the same standard that you hold everyone else. And yeah, I think that. And online moms, like, make a fake account or something, make a secret account and go do what you want and comment what you want. But again, it's all about reputation, and anything you put out there is used against you. Kill them with kindness. Always think twice, and imagine anything that you say is going to be screenshot and put on a billboard and showed to your whole entire family and all of your friends.
That's such a model answer, play on words. But yeah, being provocative is like not like being provocative for the sake of being provocative. Like, okay, great, you had fun, you had the little tension release, and
I was just in a security briefing, like a very important briefing with some like IDF generals and former Knesset members, and there's this one guy who came and he just kept like dropping the F-bomb, you know, and like cursing. And there was like one kid in the room too, like one of the people brought their child. And I was just like, child in the room. Like, and his whole thing is like, my brand is just like, be who you want and say what you want. And I'm like, okay, but like, you can be who you want and say what you want, the Baba, on your Instagram page, when you're sitting in a room of important people. Like, class is not lost. Like, you still have, there's still a level of respect I think you need to have for your elders, for the people you're speaking to. You just can't be dropping F-bombs and curse words. It's just respect towards the people of your audience. So that's just like an example of recently. I was just like,
wow. Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to curse to get your points across sometimes. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, literally. So we don't have too much time, but we have to girly about how you met your boyfriend and all that. Like, literally, just, I love this story so much. me and Jonah both watched the news clip, and Jonah got some help with translation because part of it was in Hebrew. And it's just the most iconic thing, Danielle and Danielle. So yeah, let's just girly about it real quick.
Okay. I mean, yes, we're going on, what month is it right now? We're in January, December, January, February. Okay, we've been dating for like 10 months, but I guess 10 months ago I was in Israel on a mission, and I went to interview some injured soldiers for my social media, and of course I found the cutest one, and I have been seeing him since. I mean, he's been a huge inspiration for me throughout this entire war, in a time where social media can be really overwhelming, or not overwhelming, but just like takes over everything. He's definitely been a person that's kind of pulled me back and helped me find positivity and light, because of someone like that, someone who's lost part of his body to this war and has actually experienced this war, can let it go and get through it. I think I can let it go and get through it too. So as long as he keeps pushing, I'll keep pushing, and we're very happy.
Yeah,
and he is so strong. Like, really, just all of our soldiers that have, you know, put themselves in the line of fire and made these sacrifices, and, you know, wounded soldiers. A lot of people don't talk about how wounded soldiers live wounded for the rest of their life. Like, they're not part of the death count or whatever, but still, like, these are thousands and thousands of lives affected. And it's just a number that we can't even, and a condition for so many people that we can't even visualize. And so in terms of, like, so you went as a role of, I'm here to, on a mission to volunteer. And as someone who also volunteers and meets so many different people from so many different backgrounds and places, sometimes, you know, like, when you look at the intentions of doing what we do, right, sometimes all of it kind of gets mixed up, and you started as coming there as a representative of America and stuff, and then you ended up, you know, with a guy.
Finding love.
Yeah. And so kind of how was just that process, and then we'll wrap it up, of, you know, going from that mindset switch of, oh, like, I took it from something professional and, you know, representative to something very personal.
Well, I'll say this. let me form my words correctly here. This all goes back to reputation. And for me, I don't want to be defined by a man. And I like that also is just like, that's a really big thing for me. And as much as I love Daniel, he's on his own journey. And he and I think what makes us work is that he respects that I'm on my journey and I respect that he's on his. And he, again, keeps me grounded because he's the opposite of social media and all of these things. I really like went into that interview just interviewing a cute guy I saw, you know. I think this is a perfect way to almost wrap in that I took the risk and I was just with visiting the soldiers with a group and I was bored and I had my mic and my light and I saw a cute soldier and was like, hey, can I interview you? And the worst he could have said was no, because first I offered him a fruit roll up and he rejected it. And you know, that was like a hit to my ego. But then I sat
that's
down
crazy,
and then,
that's such a trend in Israel. Everyone loves the fruit roll-up.
It's not anymore, I don't think. But he rejected it. He's like, all people just keep giving me sugar all day. And then I just sat down and started talking to him where he started just telling his story and I was like, oh my God, can I record this? This is incredible. So that's how that even happened, you know? And you have to shoot your shot, and I shot my shot. I originally just asked him if he wanted to get drinks with me on Friday, and that was that. From there, like, we've been dating since. It's a matter of taking the shot. What was the worst he could say? No thank you. Oh
yeah,
it never hurts. It never hurts to try. Always remember, I don't know, you represent yourself. You're a representative of yourself. And I know that up until this point in my life, like, I really don't have regrets because I've tried all of the things I wanted to try. And I live my life to the standards that we spoke about today, in that I'm really thoughtful of my reputation and I'm careful, but I also take the risk and I'm eager to succeed. And all of these things, I guess, make me the influencer that I am.
Cool.
See, this is why you belong in Israel. You have that chutzpah. Like, you just have the the courage, and you're like, just do it.
Yeah.
We all have it. It's there.
Right.
You just got to do it.
Such inspiration.
With that said, thank you so much, Daniel, for joining us today. Thank you for listening to D-Influence, the show that sets the record straight and explores the world of influencers, content creators, and more. Thank you so much for joining us today, Danielle. My name is Jonah
Hoffman.
Thank you. And Amanda, as always, thank you for being here, and we will see you in the next one.
De-influenced. It's time to set the record straight with Jonah Hoffman and Amanda Yakubovitz.